And welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name is Katie Stoll.
Prove it.
Here's all my information.
Oh, good. I was worried. Hello. Hi. This is also that same first and only news podcast with a person whose name is slightly different. It's Cody. Hi, is my name.
Prove it. Cody, real quick, just want to wish you and all of our listeners a happy World Humanitarian Day.
All right.
It's very, very appropriate given what we're going to discuss
this week. For us.
Spoiler, it's not how we're humanitarians to the world.
We're not humanitarianing.
We're not humanitarianing. It is also National Tooth Fairy Day. Well, August 20th.
Even more
National
appropriate.
Tooth Fairy
somehow.
Day. I call bullshit. You know, I've never called bullshit on a holiday. I don't
That's
know if
true.
I have or I,
I, feel like
I haven't. We've
do
been doing
regularly.
This for several years now. And each week it astounds me that I continue to do this tired bit. But here we are, bullshit on National Tooth Fairy Day, because any day can be National Tooth Fairy Day if that's the day you've lost your tooth and you're giving it to the fucking tooth fairy.
That's true, but also in the same way, I would
We don't have National, well, I guess Christmas is National Santa Claus Day.
We have Father's Day, we have Mother's Day, but
They're not magical creatures.
But you're still a mother on any day of the year. It's a day to honor specifically the tooth fairy, right? It's to say, tooth fairy, thank you for everything you do. You do this work all year round. We appreciate you.
The tooth fairy hasn't paid me a visit in so fucking long.
Katie,
why do I have to give
any
respect to the tooth fairy? Oh, I don't know. How about that root canal I had? I maybe didn't lose the whole tooth, but I lost part of it.
That's true,
and
actually.
I had to spend a lot of money.
You should have gotten money for that.
I spent
that's right.
so much money.
That's true. The Tooth Fairy should be subsidizing all dental appointments for people,
The Tooth
right?
Fairy should be the name of dental insurance.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she would if we put all those teeth under our pillows. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe that's the mistake we're making.
Yeah, maybe
collect
your
those
orthodontist
teeth.
Just sort of threw them away instead of...
Maybe she's cashing right? in. This episode...
Loophole.
This episode is sponsored by Wondery's Business Movers, where you find out how people rose to the top of their industry and the obstacles they overcame along the way. The latest season focuses on Stan Lee and Marvel. You can listen to the latest episode of Business Movers, Stan Lee, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. This is where we check in with the guests, but we do not have a guest. So I'm going to check in with you, Cody, and you, Jonathan, how are you doing today?
So
I'm still talking in
here.
This cadence, and I don't like it.
Why not?
It feels
it's good.
Limiting.
No, it means that you're engaging with
emphatically.
People.
Emphatically. How are
exactly.
you doing?
Exactly. Fine. You know, little tired.
Elaborate.
A little, yeah. Got a headache, actually. But that's just fine. I shouldn't have even said that. Cause
have you gotten your eyes checked lately?
It informs how people will be listening to this show.
Yeah, yeah.
So ask me again. Ask me again.
Cody, how are you doing
110%.
Today?
I'm wow. at full capacity.
Can you take it down a notch? No one believes it.
I will. It's too much. I can't bring it down. I got to keep it up here.
Yeah,
sorry.
I get that.
Ah! It's a good day!
Yeah.
See, there was that...
It was great.
Believe me?
No, but I appreciate the effort. I'm, you know, similarly, I don't have a headache, though I could, but I don't.
You could, wait,
but
what?
But do you guys know?
I guess I could fuck with a headache. I can
I
get
could
a headache.
I could fuck with a headache right now. No, you know that, I mean, I know that stage, and I'm sure regular headache users will relate to that time where you're like teetering, like I could get a headache. I feel a slight pressure. But I don't
I
have
that.
One
I get,
at the moment. I'm tired. I am also tired. I don't know why. We were hypothesizing before we started recording. It's that end of summer malaise, sure. The news is also really heavy, and we're going to get into that. And it's hard. It's hard to feel pumped up to come on here and talk about the tragedies and, you know, deaths and catastrophes around the world and our role and how we have contributed to those things. Thoughts?
Agree. What if we talk about the new trailer for The Eternals, brought to you by Disney Plus, or
no.
just Disney, the regular Disney? Doesn't matter. That's exciting. Instead of the news?
No.
I mean,
maybe.
It's you know, you feel it's like kind of powerless and out of there's no control over the things that you're consuming every day. I mean, you can control what you read, but.
But you can't control what's happening in the world.
Because you got to read about what's going on in the world.
Right.
And then there's no, you know, it's, you know, exhaustion from kind of screaming into the void a little bit. Right?
Yeah.
There's also, yeah, there's also only so much you can beat yourself up or think what could America have done differently, because that's not that helpful and, like, doesn't serve the purpose of, like, okay, where are we now? What can we do now? And I think that's, you know, part of what we're gonna try to focus on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that background positive,
yeah.
John.
Yeah, we're gonna go online. We're gonna get tickets to The Eternals early, so we don't have to wait in line. Sorry, Jonathan. How are you
and
doing?
Cody, thank you as well. No, how are you doing, Jonathan?
No,
before we dig in,
I'm good. I'm feeling like 70% Cody level, which I think is like a 95% Jonathan level.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
No, I'm doing all right. Considering I'm feeling energized. I'm feeling this is me as the employee saying I'm like energized. I'm feeling great.
Yeah.
The person I'm probably
you know. You're too
I'm
new here.
I'm fired up. Bleeding.
You're too new to be honest with us.
I don't know when that
I'm
happens.
Joking. You can be honest. You could tell me that this is the worst day and you're disappointed in us, and I'd be
no.
I make it
you
better.
You only say happy to be a part of the team. That's it.
You know, my real weakness is that I'm too much of a perfectionist.
Mm.
Really.
Interesting.
So, like, that's what I have to really focus on more. No, I don't know when that happens. Like, when you start a new, like, job and you're in an office with other people for months and months, when your, like, job interview barriers go down and when your actual personality comes out, I feel like I've felt pretty comfortable with both of you from early on. Perhaps it's because our interactions on the podcast are exclusively over the internet, but I do feel pretty comfortable bearing my soul.
Good.
We try to
foster a safe virtual space. Shall we get started on the news?
Speaking of safe virtual space, did you check out Mark Zuckerberg's virtual interview?
No. What is this
program?
Oh, are we in a Horizon workroom right now?
You look so lifelike.
Truly. Oh, I know what you're talking about. What a nightmare.
Yeah. He's really
the virtual
leaning into it. Oh, it's just interesting to me that, like, because we've got the space billionaires, obviously, who are like, we got to get out there. We got to go. We got to pollute space. We got to be the expanse of stuff. And then Zuckerberg's like, what if we turn all of that toxicity and bad business inward? What if we create our own space? And he's just doing this, like, he's doing the same thing, but, like, in and, like, virtually. And it's amusing to me.
I think it's hilarious that yesterday there was Mark Zuckerberg is going to be on CBS This Morning tomorrow, and he's going to make an announcement about the future of Facebook. But it's about just like, oh, if you buy one of his Quest 2 headsets that's hundreds and hundreds of dollars, you can jump into a virtual cartoon conference room. And I think CEOs often think that that's the future of business and the internet, because their jobs are primarily just talking to people and going from meeting to meeting, and they might think about it differently if they were ever in a place where they're like sitting down and having
meetings. That's all they think about, right?
Yeah, that's what work
meetings?
Is.
Yeah, and then and here we are. And well, first of all, Zoom exists, Mark. I don't know if you've heard, but like we can do it. If you have like internet access, we don't need to do the virtual thing. But also, like, if you're interviewing somebody, don't you want to like see who they actually are and not like their internet idea of how they want to represent themselves? Like, you were just talking about like your interview barriers, and like if you can create your own avatar, that's another barrier.
Ridiculous.
That you're making.
You're not ever getting to. Yes, we all understand. there's no facial expressions. You can hide the fact that you're a sociopath. You could do whatever.
It's just so silly because it also reminds me of, because he keeps doing this and he's going, you know, it'll work one day and there will be cheaper versions of it and you'll get your, you know, your $50 headset and so on. And, you know, we're going to, our slow decline continues. But it just reminds me of that thing he tried a couple years ago. I forget what natural disaster it was, but there was a terrible natural disaster and he used this technology, this virtual technology, to give tours of the
yes
the,
well this the was aftermath. Also when he was floating the idea of running for president.
Well, I still think he should revisit that. I maintain
he's got time.
That it would be the funniest thing for him to actually do instead of to just tour the country and do his like I love eating dinner with families on farms.
The good old days when Zuckerberg was our most ridiculous billionaire.
Yeah, those incredible. Much simpler times. We should move on to some more impactful news.
Some news we actually plan on talking about.
Yeah, like let's stop diversioning. Yep.
Let's stop Divergent and start The Eternals.
Yeah.
Is that anything? All right, go on.
No. Jonathan, take us through a couple of the breaking news so we can talk some more about the awful tragedies that are surrounding us.
Sure. Well, earlier this week, the CDC said that booster shots for coronavirus were going to be available to Americans starting the week of September 20th. They're going to be first available for the immunocompromised, the elderly, healthcare workers, and they're going to recommend, or they are recommending, that individuals get those shots 8 months after their second dose of either the Pfizer or Moderna.
I'll hop in and say my opinion, which you're going to also side up with evidence that you've compiled here, of how frustrating this feels at this juncture when so much of the world has not been vaccinated, that we are jumping ahead right away into booster shots, especially since there isn't evidence as of yet that that actually increases your immunity. Am I correct on that?
There's evidence of pretty robust immunity after the third dose. The evidence right now the evidence right now is not that the immunity is waning so much. Like the difference will be small enough that we really should be vaccinating all the people who have not been vaccinated. The reasoning is that, you know, most of the health officials are saying, yeah, we're seeing some waning immunity after 8 months, 10 months, 12 months. It's unclear there because there's so many variables. The Delta variant, which is a lot more transmissible, and that may be the cause of it. But it also might be that the original efficacy that we thought these vaccines had was determined when people were not interacting that much, when we were all wearing masks. And now that we're not doing that, it's like what the real world situation is different from what the phase 3 clinical trials were. So it's still not entirely clear that the efficacy is waning that much, or that it's waning for hospitalization and death. It might just be a little bit for infection, and a few more people will get infected but not get seriously ill.
And I guess to me it's like we're rushing to make this decision while the virus is raging out of control with people who haven't received any doses and don't have access.
I think The main concern here is that if we are using shots here to give people boosters to bump them up from 75% efficacy to 85% efficacy, that's great. And I, of course, would want that in my body, but that's not getting someone from 0% to 75% in one of many, many places around the world. The White House says we can do both. They're like, we got tons. We bought a ton of doses. We're going to have enough to give to the 200 million people who've already been vaccinated in the U.S. And, you know, we've committed 500 million to go overseas, but that's kind of in dispute. No, I just like, given our track record of doing stuff, I'm more inclined to believe we won't be able to do both.
The other part of it is that's interesting is that we're like the least vaccinated country. Other countries are passing us by. We're not the least vaccinated. There's lots of places in the world that do not have access. But in terms of, you know, Europe and, you know, other countries, they are outpacing us big time. And so we're hovering at this like 50% vaccinated mark. Now we're going to roll out boosters.
Yeah, and like the it's tough because I agree with a lot of the experts and the WHO that we really need to increase access to vaccines in other parts of the world, because the more unvaccinated people there are who have no protection, the more likelihood there is of a variant coming along that screws everything up for everyone. But at the same time, once it's been 8 months since my second dose and those boosters are available, I'm gonna do it.
You know, of course I am. Of course, and we should. I just feel on World Humanitarian Day,
right?
I mean, it's just part of the thing. We should move on because there's so much to talk about. But yes,
Cody and Katie, have you received your California recall ballot?
I have. I have received it. I have not sent it in yet. I will be doing it this weekend, I assure you guys.
Same.
We have until the 14th of September, correct?
I think they accept them up to a week afterwards.
Yeah,
but
that's
how
the date.
We declare what the winner that night. So please get it in before that.
Yeah, I do want to talk about this a bit. I mean, I've talked about it a bit in the past, and a lot of our listeners are not here in California, but it's worth paying attention to. We are in our recall election. Early voting has started, and the communication has been confusing. I'm still seeing people post about this, so I want to talk about it one more time. The first and foremost, most important thing you do is you check no on the recall. Now, the governor's office, the messaging, and the Democratic Party has been to not vote for anybody for box two, to not check a replacement. And I understand this to be a choice, a strategy to not complicate the messaging. No on the recall, because there's a lot of people who are not happy with Gavin Newsom. I'm hoping that works. I mean, I see everybody around me is kind of freaking out about like, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't we, you know, cast a vote for someone, which you would think you should, but apparently not. The lead, because the problem is that if the recall goes forward, the replacement doesn't need to have even gotten a majority of the votes. It's whomever has the most votes of the list of somewhat like 30 candidates here, most of them conservative. And the top runner is Larry Helder, who, by the way, news was breaking today on Political, and this is from Huffington Post. California recall candidate Larry Elder accused of waving gun at ex-fiance. She goes on to detail a string of incidences of him, you know, being very abusive with her. And this is according to Political. The alleged incident occurred in the midst of a heated conversation as their relationship was unraveling. He was in the bedroom and I was standing by the door, she said. We talked to each other. He became silent, she said, then slowly walked over to the nightstand, opened the door, took out a gun, a 45 pistol. And he checked to see if it was loaded while I was talking. He wanted to make sure I saw that he had it. You know, all sorts of terrible things about this man. Anyway, I digress. Potential future governor of California, if people don't send in their ballots.
And that's, I mean, just a cursory glance of, like, his views are not very hope-inspiring.
No.
Like, wants to, like, just abolish Medicare, thinks that, thinks women exaggerate sexism. Thinks that employees should be able to ask when... If a potential employee is pregnant or planning to be pregnant, and when that is going to be, and just sort of a lot of general things like that are not great.
He also says that climate change is real, but that it's not affecting fire season. You know, is going to roll back, you know, oil regulations and regulations in general.
He supports overturning Roe v. Wade. A lot of.
So in general, yeah.
I wonder if Larry Elder would think it's okay to ask a woman if they plan to become pregnant when hiring for a job. But if you ask him if he's vaccinated, he'll say that's a violation.
HIPAA violation.
Really great point. We should bring it up with Larry.
My guess is yes. When he becomes governor.
Anyway,
I mean, he could win with like 16% of the vote or something, even if no loses 47 to 50 or something.
And the you know, polling is never going to be like, you know, it's one or the other. It's right or it's wrong. So like don't put too much stock into it, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, it's very close. So here's what I want you guys to do. We're going to move on. A lot of our listeners don't live in California. A lot of our listeners do. First off, vote if you can. Second, talk to the people you know. I am not fucking joking anymore. Like, we all know that people are paying attention with the, you know, general elections and the presidential elections and all of that right now. Talk to your mom. Talk to your brother. I'm going to. I doubt that they would have thought to send in their ballot. Talk to your neighbors. That's annoying. I don't care. Do it. Is that a good message to give?
Knock on their doors and bother them.
It's hard because it's not like I want to be out here like standing Gavin Newsom, because I don't and I won't. But this sucks.
Yeah,
not a great situation.
None of us are Gavin Newsom stans. But I do think it's a weird strategy to go with the just vote. I mean, it's too late. It's too late to have a consensus backup candidate. But it's funny because at the last California recall election, we did. He was the lieutenant governor, Cruz Bustamante. And it was like, vote no on the recall, but then vote for Cruz Bustamante. And Arnold was just so popular, he like steamrolled it and it didn't matter. But now there
That's
is
That's like
no
comparing
consensus.
Apples to chocolate cake.
Yeah,
Arnold being chocolate cake for
delicious.
A celebrity.
They're both tasty.
Yeah, this would have been better for our state, but Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, you know, a snack. Take that right. out. I don't mean it because it's like, I meant, edit this out so it's better. I don't mean Arnold Schwarzenegger is a snack.
You mean
you know what I mean. I'm saying like, you've got a celebrity versus a politician. It's not the same. Larry Elder is not the same as...
It's easy to get people out there for Arnold is what you're saying.
Well, right. The point is there's no GOP candidate that's going to run away with this thing. It's going to be like 20-25%
right.
at the most. So if we did have a backup candidate yes. this time around, even if no lost, if 90% of those no, people voting no's had someone to pick, then
right.
that
if
person would become the governor.
Exactly. If it's 50-50, just right. like straight up like yes, 50 yes, 50 no, and then the 50 that say no are like, but if so... Then this person, and the other is going to be separated.
It's very unfortunate, very, very, very unfortunate choice. This term's up in like a year and a half, so cool.
What a waste of time and money.
And money. It's just ridiculous. Cool.
So this page six story really made me laugh yesterday. The story is about a fight, not a fist fight, a verbal spat. Between Larry David, co-creator of Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Alan Dershowitz, lawyer, Trump lawyer guy.
Epstein.
Buddy. OJ?
OJ?
He was an OJ
Maybe.
Lawyer.
Yes.
Right?
Probably.
But, yes. So both these guys have places on Martha's Vineyard, as you do. And this story says that a Page Six spy overheard Larry David and Alan Dershowitz yelling at each other. Dershowitz wanted to go say hi. Hi, Larry David. How are you? Larry David said, get the hell away from me. You're disgusting. You helped Trump. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And then this person who just happens to either know someone at Page Six or write for Page Six was overhearing this. And wrote it up, except, of course, that didn't happen. Alan Dershowitz called his buddies at the New York Post and said,
yeah,
I'm upset that I'm being 100%. Shunned. I'm upset that I'm being shunned for supporting Trump. So he said things like, this is Alan Dershowitz being quoted, while he was writing bad jokes, I was helping to bring about peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
What has he done?
Pardon mm-hmm. me, excuse me.
And
wait,
Dershowitz, can you explain
wait,
to me what you
fuck?
Have done?
Yeah, no, all that peace in the Middle East is what... You know how the Middle East is all peaceful all the time? So,
yeah, he did it.
That was Alan Dershowitz.
I just love the... This is a move you see a lot with like interactions like this, where it's like, you can be mad, you can be upset, but just this like... And actually, also, Larry David is not funny. His jokes are bad. It's like, you don't have... What are you doing? Like,
yeah.
You can not pretend that anybody would think that.
Yeah, you know you're wrong. and that nobody agrees with you. This is
the very unfunny Larry David came up to me. He's like, just say he sucks and you like don't like him.
This is like obviously not the most hard hitting news, but again, I keep teasing the darker news that we're going to get to. So a little levity. And this is fun. It's also, just fun to imagine this meet cute. It's fun. I wish I was there. I'm glad Dershowitz leaked it. I'm so glad to try to be petty and make himself look stupid. Thoughts?
makes me think of this other Larry David story from recent times. There's that Obama bash that may or may not have spread some COVID. Who knows? But
the Obama birthday bash?
Obama birthday bash.
I had a birthday bash.
In Martha's Vineyard. A bunch of people were invited. A bunch of people got uninvited. Larry David was one of the attendees, or he's going to be, and he missed a phone call from Obama's assistant, and he started to freak out that he'd have to, like, perform or something. Like, they wanted him to do, like, a stand-up set. He's like, I gotta get, like, a set together. And then he called back, and he was, like, very, like, just dreading it, like, did not want to do this, didn't want to have a conversation. And then they told him that he was uninvited, and he was just, like, really relieved, and then...
Why was he... Oh, because of COVID?
No, he just didn't want to go, and he didn't want to do stand-up.
But he was uninvited because of COVID?
He was uninvited because there was, like, a bunch of backlash of, like, you're having a lot of people during COVID,
they scaled back the party, like, Jay-Z and Beyonce didn't get uninvited, but Larry David got uninvited.
Larry David did, and he was
How do you invite Larry David over Beyonce? You don't. You just don't. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back, as promised, for even more sad news.
On each season of Business Movers, you find out how a slighten of industry became a titan of windustry and overcame obstacles along the way. The newest season explores Stan Lee. His story, not like him physically. From his first job as an usher at a movie theater to working at a comic book store, Stan went from being born in the Bronx during the height of the Great Depression to creating a group of characters that rake in billions for Marvel. And Marvel being a multi-billion dollar company, it's not hard to imagine that in the early 2000s, Lee was in financial ruins and on the verge of suing Marvel for what he believed was owed to him. The season explores how he changed both the comic book and entertainment industries while saving his own career in the process, going on to become a beauty pageant judge, a security guard, a general in World War II, a bartender, a FedEx employee, and more. This audio documentary about Stan Lee's life is compelling and detailed without being too dense. It's very interesting to hear Lee's journey told and how he pushed back on book bans and was able to infuse his work with social issues he felt were important, letting his voice shine through. Also, his actual literal voice is just fun. It's a good voice. Listen to the latest episode of Business Movers, Stan Lee, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
And we are back, as promised, for even more bad news.
Promises made, promises kept.
Mission accomplished. Let's talk about Afghanistan. Obviously, we did discuss this on Worst Year Ever this week. And while we did think that an hour was enough to unpack the entirety of this complicated and devastating.
Mm-hmm. We did it.
We
didn't miss a beat. We didn't miss any fact that was necessary. We didn't miss any nuance.
But,
we got everything in there.
But that said, we're going to talk about it some more. Just some other things.
Okay.
Just a little bit. As we talked about at the beginning, I'm feeling really bad. I've been thinking about this every day a lot, reading the news reports, the images of people trying to jump on the plane and falling to their death, and the stories of the fear, the heartbreak of the people left behind. And it is disgusting, the continued finger pointing from both sides, though somehow none of the fingers are pointing at George Bush. I talk a lot on the show about our collective amnesia for the role we play in things, you know, like with Britney Spears or, you know, just different things that we're looking at from our current lens. And I think it's important for us all to be honest about how we contributed culturally to where we are here today. You know, and the truth is not in the early polls, like in 2001, you know, polling consistently showed support for the military intervention in Afghanistan. I think it was like 88% in October 2001. And I'm not suggesting that the majority of our listeners supported the war, because I know that isn't true.
I mean, many of them might have been like 5.
Well, but there's that. That's what I mean. Like, you know, and again, we talked about this on Worst Year Ever, but I just keep coming back to it because there's so much of this president and that president and who's the worst person involved here. And they all are. And we all allowed for this to happen. Some of us were not of age. A lot of us didn't really understand. But it does speak also whiplash polling. We're also reactionary and so easily manipulated. And I think that a lot of us have, I hope, have grown from that. But it is the reality of it. And then we checked out, you know, We stopped paying attention. Obama was in charge. The war wasn't happening here. It's easy to forget. It's easy to buy in to the vision, the version that were shown on TV and in movies. So, yeah, this isn't about Republicans or Democrats. This is about America, and it's who we fucking are. And it's kind of why we're sitting here every day, every week, talking about all this stuff when it feels powerless, because we have to talk about it. We have to acknowledge it if we're going to, like, not be this way. You know what I mean? Is this pointless for me to be saying? I also just feel like I'm yapping my jab here, you know, but it's just what I've been thinking about all week.
You know, I wonder if we talk about polling, if 3 months ago, if you had polled people 3, 4, 5 months ago, if you'd polled Americans, do we still have troops in Afghanistan, what the number would have been? I'm not convinced that the majority of Americans knew we were still, you know, essentially occupying another country.
At least like a couple years ago, I would believe that that's true, you know? Yeah,
and I don't think, you know, you don't want to like blame the ignorance of the American people, because of course it's like Afghanistan is not part of the day-to-day life and experience of most Americans. But I don't think there was this understanding up until this week with all of the postmortems of how this went down. I don't think there was an understanding of the inevitability of what happened.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
You know, the idea that the Taliban was just waiting us out, unless, like, Biden could have either, I guess, kept the same number of people in and we just keep going forever, do another troop surge to try to win, you know, whatever that means.
Well, yeah.
Or do what we did and leave.
Well, the American people certainly don't understand that. And it's been obfuscated and we've been lied to about what's been happening over there for so long. You know, there's also a purposeful lack of information, I would think, readily accessible to people. I mean, you can dig for it. But yeah, this would have happened. It would have happened 10 years ago if we'd done it then and not wasted all this money, made it worse. But the thing that is squarely on Biden, on all of these administrations, the more we talk about these, about what's happening right now, the people that we have promised asylum to, of a home for, you know, it's not just the 18,000 translators. It's more than that. It's like something like 30,000 people. So many people and families of people that worked with us and helped us for the last 20 years. And a lot of these people have been applying for their visas for years and years. Apparently, the program makes it such that you have to have been working for the military for two whole years. And so people that were working for 18 months and, you know, were lost the position for this reason or that have been denied. And they keep having, you know, they've soldier friends here fighting and advocating for them and to no avail. This has been going on a long time. But also Biden knew what was going to happen, knew that we were going to be leaving. You can't finger point and say that it's Donald Trump or it's our visa system when you're the fucking president of the United States. I'm angry about it.
No, he's helpless. There's nothing to be done. Yeah, it's very, like, frustrating.
But just in general, this policy promising this. And I mean,
we've got a long history of promising things and not following through.
I know.
Has there been a time, you know, we talk about like, well, this occupation didn't work, this way of doing things, we pulled out too soon. Has there ever been a time in the U.S.'s long history of being an occupying force where we would consider it a success?
Like, Vietnam!
I know Vietnam and Afghanistan are the two big examples, but like, We do this a lot.
America in general? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is... It's just... Leave everybody alone.
Like, right. Yeah.
If you just, like, if you want to help, help, but Jesus, like, this is not how to do it. The thing is, the winning isn't necessarily, like... Yes, there are many examples of it working in that...
In the short
term. They did what the people doing it wanted. They want to keep the war machine going, right?
Yeah, the defense contractors won.
Right. In terms of, like, you know, like, the morally, like, we did this and we had this concrete goal of doing this. Like, well, no. Helped out in World War II. That was nice.
I want to talk a bit about the situation there right now. They are aiming to fly out 5,000 to 9,000 people a day. I don't understand how that's even possible. But also the Taliban are setting up checkpoints around the airport ports. They've agreed to allow safe passage to civilians trying to get on U.S. directed planes. But obviously this isn't going to last long, and this is going to be a long process. And it's not safe to even get to and from the airport. You know, there are already lots of reports, from the countryside and the smaller provinces, towns, that, you know, Taliban are rounding up people already that have worked for the government, for the United States, making examples of them. It's terrible. It's all terrible. And Jonathan put this in our notes, and I think it's a good point to bring up just in general. I know that we're focused on getting the people that worked for us out of there, or so they say. But there's also just the moral obligation of the fact that we came in there, made everything so much worse for everybody. And there's no place anywhere in the world that wants them. I mean, we are seeing the rhetoric here in the United States. You're seeing it around the world. I've got this article, like, just around the world, you know. President Macron, Europe cannot alone assume the consequences of Afghanistan's fall. You know, we have to anticipate and protect ourselves against a wave of migrants. Austria won't take any migrants.
An invasion of migrants.
You know, on August 5th, 10 days before Afghanistan fell to the Taliban, Austria, Denmark, Belgium, and the Netherlands, Greece, and Germany signed a letter to the EU asking that whatever happens, they will be allowed to repatriate. Essentially send back any Afghan citizens. It's around the world.
America should do it all.
Well, we have... Right.
Like, we did it. We did it.
Well, also, and, like, even the positive things that we... Like, the women being able to work without fear and girls going to school, that was a good thing, you know?
It was.
Like, and we have no, right, we had no plan to continue it, and that's why, like, members of the Afghan robotics team that we posted so many feel-good stories about over the last few years is now, like, scrambling to find a place to go.
And everybody's just ready to turn their backs now. I mean, they're not. People aren't, but the governments are. Go ahead, Cody.
Oh, no. I mean, well, people are too. Yeah, that's the thing.
People, like, are
especially
too.
Especially here. I mean, you have even just... Obviously, the right-wing sphere is going to be, like, you know, the invasion of migrants and stuff. But Charlie Kirk is like, oh, they're going to send... They're always going to frame it like it's on purpose. It's so weird. Like, he was ranting about how, like, Biden's doing this on purpose so he can get, like... 30,000 more Ilhan Omars to, like, replace us and stuff. It's like Biden is doing the thing that the majority of Americans want because of a 20-year-old war that you also disagree with. Like, that's the weird thing too.
Well, they,
like,
all
even
walk
the America
us back,
First weirdos, you know? Are like, we also want the end to the war. But, like, the consequences we will have no part in.
This is interesting from the Daily Beast today. Trump's final acting defense secretary has now audaciously claimed that the former president never had any intention of going through with his own plan. Chris Miller told Defense One that Trump's deal with the Taliban was actually all a play to disguise his administration's secret strategy. He said, "We weren't just going to head for the door. We were going to jam ousted Afghan President Ghani hard and make him cut a deal with the Taliban. It would have been ugly, wouldn't have been great, but there was no plan to just leave." After they've scrubbed it from his website. Anyway, just wanted to insert little tidbit.
You know what will happen?
But they did want that.
Consequences. Yeah.
They've been talking about it for years. And if Biden had been extending it, it would have been something that they criticized him for.
Also, if you're still buying into this Trump 14-dimensional chess thing,
yeah,
that everything was part of this like better strategy, whatever he would have done would have been better. He was playing every side. Like, you can't help people who still believe that.
Well, right. Also, like, playing every side, like, it's not like even like playing every side in a way of like, I've got like my goal, my ultimate goal, and I'm going to do this over here. I'm going to do this over here, and I'm going to like play them against each other, and then we're going to do that. It's not that. It's Mac from It's Always Sunny's playing both sides. I play both sides. So then no matter who wins, that then I'm on that side. That's not the exact quote. I apologize. But like, that's what it is. It's not like it's three-dimensional chess being played on a checkerboard, where it's like, that game doesn't work here.
I want to bring this back to what Jonathan just brought up. And you're right. We did bring some changes to the way of life there that were significant improvements for the citizens that are now being taken away, especially in regards to women. And it is terrifying to think about what this experience is for them and what this means for their future. I'm just going to read some of these quotes from interviews with Afghan women because I think they deserve to be read. There's this piece about women describing being taunted by men in the streets over the last few days. "Go and put on your chadari, burqa," one called out. "It's your last days of being out in the streets," said another. "I will marry four of you in one day," said a third. "I'm so worried about my future. It seems so murky. If the Taliban take over, I lose my identity. It is about my existence. It is not about their withdrawal. I was born in 2004, and I have no idea what the Taliban did to women, but I know women were banned from everything." That is Wahida Sadeki, a high school student in Kabul. "As a woman, I feel like I am the victim of this political war that men started. I felt like I can no longer laugh out loud. I can no longer listen to my favorite songs. I can no longer meet my friends in our favorite cafe. I can no longer wear my favorite yellow dress or pink lipstick. And I can no longer go to my job or finish the university degree that I worked for years to achieve." Yeah, it's hard, you know, and you juxtapose this with, you know, the Taliban have gone on this PR spree and you know, announcing that they're committed to women retaining their freedom, but within the confines of Sharia law, you know, and they're saying that the press will be protected, but nobody believes that, you know. This is, of course, something that they would say now. We talked about this on Worst Year Ever, too, but they want to be legitimized. This is the time where everyone's paying the closest attention. And it doesn't change the fact that things are already happening to instill fear in citizens. I already mentioned some of it earlier on. There have been protests over the last few days. And now, according to reports, there have already been Taliban shooting at protesters or firing into the air. It's bad, and it's going to continue to get worse. Yeah. So what can we do to help? I asked Jonathan to look into this. If any of you guys have any information, I would love to hear from you. I saw on social media there was a viral post going around from some meme account on Instagram where they chartered a private plane to try to get people out, and they raised like $100 million. I don't know how much, many millions of dollars. They've raised a lot of money, and everybody was sharing it. And I certainly understand the desire to do things like that. But from what I've seen and throughout my life of well-meaning Americans making things worse, oftentimes stuff like that has a bunch of unintended consequences. So I would love to have anybody telling me any information about that, because I didn't see anything transparent about it. But here are some ways that you can help. You can volunteer to help resettle refugees. And this specifically would mean volunteering to help. You pick people up at the airport, help with meal assistance, mentorship, tutoring, helping people get settled. And you can participate if you're in one of the areas where refugees are arriving, and there's a standby list that you can join for other areas too. The website you can go to is the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. So go check that out. I think that we should share these in the social media links as well. You can take up a challenge. Women for Women International says that it will match up to $500,000 of donations for its Afghanistan program. You could also donate to places like Women for Afghan Women, which is, or according to them, it's the largest women's group in Afghanistan. The Afghan Journalists Safety Committee. There's a whole bunch that we'll share. We've also included email the White House, which I guess you can do, but I always feel very frustrated giving that as advice. Yeah, do it if it helps, but I don't know.
Might make you feel better.
It might make you feel better.
Sometimes it feels better to yell at someone.
Yeah, yell at Joe.
Or yeah. Alan Dershowitz. Like it feels, exactly, it just makes you feel good.
Exactly.
I want to barrel through right now. Because now we've finally done it. We've unpacked Afghanistan. I think that World Humanitarian Day, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what's happening in Haiti as well. So while this was happening, a magnitude 7.2 earthquake on Saturday killed at least 1,941 people in Haiti. It's much likely to be much higher than that because we are still uncovering bodies. And so far, the injured is around 10,000. And these are a lot of very, very serious and gruesome injuries. So yeah, those numbers are expected to climb. And then after that, Tropical Storm Grace dumped up to 15 inches of rain on the area Monday and Tuesday, which caused flooding and slowed down rescue efforts. UNICEF is estimating that 1.2 million people in Haiti are affected, including 540,000 children. Now, in 2010, for comparison, the earthquake then killed 220,000 people. Now, when I first read that earlier this week, I just gasped. I remember how bad it was, but I hadn't realized just how awful. And that one was centered right by Port-au-Prince. And this one was centered primarily in the southwestern cities, in the smaller, more rural areas, as opposed to the main city. And I mentioned that 2010 earthquake, they're still trying to recover from that. And then in 2016, Matthew Hurricane further devastated the still recovering country. And apparently it blew so much salt water inland that it's wrecked their crops for the last several years. So there's already been like a huge food shortage there. The rise of a bunch of gang violence and people fighting there. The roads are very notoriously dangerous for people to get around on. And then all of this comes on the heels of the increased political instability after the July 7th assassination of the Haitian president, Jovenel Moise, which was apparently part of a likely a coup d'etat. Anyway, there's a lot going on there. This is a true humanitarian crisis, of course, as so many are. I think it's important to just talk a little bit about why Haiti does get screwed over. Jonathan wrote some notes about this as well, and I'm glad you put this in here. I wanted to research a little bit about the U.S. specifically in Haiti, and I found this Vox article from a couple years ago. The U.S. government has long been active in Haiti's politics. When the slaves in the foreign country fought for independence in the late 18th century, the U.S. provided aid to the French colonists in an effort to stop the rebellion, fearful that the revolt would spread to the U.S. Even when Haiti gained independence in 1804, it took the U.S. until 1862 to recognize it as an independent nation, subjecting the country to an economic embargo in the intervening years. In 1915, U.S. President Woodrow Wilson sent troops to Haiti for a military occupation that did not end until 1934 and saw the deaths of thousands of Haitians. During that time, the U.S. controlled parts of the country's government, including its customs and tax apparatus. It also supported the regime of Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier, who oversaw a reign of terror that fueled a mass exodus from the island nation. You know, and then so on and so forth. And United States getting involved in their different politics and how it's shaped it to be the country it is today, and why it's never built its own infrastructure. Part of it also has been, especially over the past decade of back-to-back natural disasters, you know, a large amount of humanitarian aid coming from different places, some of it doing more harm than good, and they're not having an infrastructure to properly dole it out. I've been talking for so long. Sorry.
It's been great. It's been very informative. You care about it.
I just think that that's an important part of this conversation, too, as we're looking, again, the theme of the show, how we're showing up around the world, helping people.
And Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, a 20-year occupation by the U.S. is something you read a little bit too often when it comes to another country's woes. But it feels like, it doesn't feel like, it has been the case that Haiti has been the victim of so much exploitation.
Not just from the...
by European powers.
Yeah, not just the U.S. here.
No, this is a situation where they have never been able to generate industry or wealth of their own. When I was reading about how they had to pay a debt to the French colonists who they had excised, and this really just kept them from building anything of their own throughout the 19th and into the 20th century. And since then, it was the U.S. occupation, you know, dictatorships, corruption, and then, you know, they're on some fault lines, and they're in the Caribbean Sea. There's a lot of natural disasters, and it's just like, you want this place to catch a break so badly.
I know. And I think it's really important, just again, you know, it wasn't so long ago that former President Donald Trump referred to Haiti as a shithole country. And we look at these disasters that keep happening and these atrocities that are happening. And, you know, it's horrible. The story is coming out. The hospitals are, destroyed. But even the areas where people are receiving medical treatment, I listened to this podcast, an interview, a woman lost her foot, had to be amputated outside, and then but all of her possessions were in the building that collapsed, and she has to also pay for her food and her medicine while she's recovering under a tree from her amputation. And it's easy to look at and be like, what's happening over there? We are what's happening over there. Imperialism is what's happening over there. What happened over there, you know? So when we talk about it as to why the infrastructure isn't present, and they're geographically located in a region that is prone to natural disasters like this, and especially more so as climate change happens, etc. So what can we do? I hear you all asking.
What can we do?
What can we do? UNICEF. This is from a PBS NewsHour list. And I'm hoping that they've vetted everything properly.
This list is not exhaustive. So what I listed here was the first third of this list. So I think we should put the PBS NewsHour link in the description as well.
That's great.
It appeared to be the most thorough thing that I found.
I think that's the ticket. You guys should peruse for yourself and look. UNICEF, Project Hope, Save the Children are all good options.
You know, mentioning this, we should definitely talk about the tricky history in terms of donating after what happened in 2010, especially with the Red Cross.
That's exactly what I was about to do. It's great. I mean, it's just, this is important because, again, like I mentioned earlier with the airplane, and a lot of us, we tend to donate or do the thing that's quick and easiest, but we don't always know if it's the money is being used properly or if what we're donating to, if there are better ways that we could use our money. So you go ahead, Jonathan, you tell us about the Red Cross.
Sure. The Red Cross after the 2010 earthquake received $500 million in donations. There was a huge, I don't know if everyone remembers, there was a huge outpouring of goodwill. There were benefit concerts streamed on television. It was a big deal. The Red Cross got $500 million in donations. And then 5 years later, NPR and ProPublica went to see where all that money went. And they had a really hard time finding it because the Red Cross is built for emergency, helping out in an emergency. So food, shelter, blankets in the immediate aftermath. The Red Cross does not have the infrastructure to be rebuilding as much, to be helping out with Haitian infrastructure. And so they had a really hard time finding where all that money went. And we still kind of don't know. A lot of it may have gone to travel, administrative things. And a lot of it, they may have put it toward projects that never happened and it got wasted. And then there was also Wyclef Jean's Yellow Haiti charity, which collapsed in 2012 after allegations that it mishandled $16 million in donations. So I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that because
we
all want to help. The only way really to help Haiti right now is through donations. And so people have to feel like confident that these are organizations that are already working on the ground. And I think that's one of the most important things. Nowadays, there are, like, I think GiveWell and Charity Navigator, they will rank organizations, and you can go on each individual website. You know, you can go to World Vision and see exactly what they would be doing. And it does take a little bit more research, but then you'll feel a lot more confident about where your money's going. I don't think any of us can be confident right now that Haiti will be great and thriving in like 2-3 years, because there are still all of these like geopolitical and environmental issues it faces. But I think you can feel good about where your money's going if you put a bit of research into it. So that's why we're going to include this PBS link in the description.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. And I think that does it for us today. Not the most lighthearted of episodes, but it is, in fact, an episode.
That is true. Couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more completely.
Thank you so much. I feel validated.
Thank
you guys for listening. Thank you guys for caring. It's been a hard week. But, you know, here we are.
It is another week.
It is another week. And just in case you forgot, don't forget, we love you very much.
Did
you say butts? We love you very butts.
We love your very butts. Much!